This is the Historians Podcast, and I'm Bob Cudmore. We welcome author and professor Bruce Chadwick to the program. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Bruce Chadwick talked about George and Martha Washington at a recent gathering up here in the Mohawk Valley, the George Washington Birthday Symposium, sponsored by the Fort Plain Museum. It was a great talk, and I asked him if he'd willing to appear on the Historians Podcast, and he said yes, and here he is. His undergraduate degree, Bruce Chadwick, is from Syracuse University and the Newhouse School of Communications, and for 23 years he was a journalist, most notably at the New York Daily News. Then he went back to college at Rutgers in New Jersey, earned a Ph.D., and teaches at Rutgers and New Jersey City University. He has a number of interests. He's written 30 books, most recently one about the New York City Police Department called Law and Disorder, but he has also published several books about George Washington, including George Washington's War, the First American Army, and George and Martha Washington. That's what he talked about at our gathering at Fulton Montgomery Community College the other day here in the Mohawk Valley. So I wanted to ask you first, Bruce Chadwick, or I want to ask you about George and Martha. So let's start, I think, where you started your talk. How did George meet Martha?
George and Martha met several times over like the winter or two prior to their marriage at parties in Virginia. But they never had a chance to really talk to each other. And then Washington was certain, just certain, that he's going to die from tuberculosis because his brother had died from tuberculosis. So he leaves the British Army after 3 years, goes to Williamsburg to see doctors, and they tell him that he doesn't have tuberculosis. He has what we today to be symptoms of the flu. Mm-hmm. So he's riding home, and he passes a friend's house, a guy named Chamberlain, and there's a party going on. He sees a lot of carriages and horses outside. So he stops by. Now, he had known Chamberlain for years, and at this point, George Washington is a relatively famous guy in Virginia because he had written his journal about his years with the British Army in the French Indian War that had been published in newspapers. So when he walks in, people immediately know who he is. So Martha's there. Now, she didn't know that he was going to be there, and he knew that she had lost her husband 18 months previously. And she knew that about a year ago, he had lost his brother. So they meet at the party and begin to offer condolences to each other on their losses. And from there, the conversation gets into a very, very deep range about their lives and their interests and their families. And that's how they carried on the relationship from that party.
Now, she originally was Martha Dandridge, right? And her first husband was Daniel Custis. And
right.
They had four children, but then he died. I always thought she was a lot older than George Washington, but she wasn't really. She was some
same
older.
Age.
Same age?
It was
really?
Custis. Dan Custis was 20 years older than she was.
She also, you know, again, had four children. Can you enumerate them? And where does she stand with the children when she meets, I mean, who's alive and who's not when she meets George?
She had four kids. Two of them had died before the age of five. And the last two, Jackie, the boy, and Patsy, the little girl, were like 2 or 3 years old. And this was her big concern. After she her husband died, because she had a lot of land and slaves and money, she was considered one of the wealthiest women in America. Every gold digger on the East Coast was chasing her. And she was horrified by this. And what she was looking for was a guy her age, because her previous husband had been much too old. A guy who was reasonably good-looking, had a decent personality, a guy who could manage her estates and had some administrative experience, and then most of all, a guy who could be a good stepfather to her two little kids. That's the type of guy she was looking for, and George Washington really met all of those criteria. And George was looking for a rich woman. He wanted to be a part of the Virginia high society. He's looking for a woman with money, and he's looking for a moneyed woman with whom he could, his age, with whom he could get along with, and that pretty much was Martha.
Now, what was George, Martha was very rich. What about George Washington? Was he well off on his own?
No, he would be, today he'd be like middle class, upper middle class. He had, his brother Lawrence had owned Mount Vernon, died, left it to his wife, who sold it to George Washington. And he had a few dozen slaves there. But he wasn't really that wealthy at the time. He became extraordinarily wealthy through her, but he was not from money.
And one thing I thought was interesting, maybe I'm getting ahead of the story, is I believe they got married at a plantation called the White House.
They did, yeah. What irony. It was Martha's plantation, or her house, and it had been painted white. And all the neighbors in town, over the years, just started referring it to as the White House. And she married George Washington. Washington technically never lived in the White House, but the White House was created for him.
Well, that's a good point. They didn't build the White House till he left office, right? Or
that's right. It or,
yeah. And
matter of fact, White House was called the White House till the 1840s, when I think Polk was in office. And over all the years after the War of 1812, when the White House had been burned, they had always painted it white. And people started calling it the White House.
Now, George Washington, I believe you could say, was quite a dashing figure. I think he was popular with women. How about Martha? Was she good looking?
Martha was about, George was 6'2 and a half, weighed about 210, and walked very erect, so he seemed taller than most guys. Now, remember, the average guy in that era was about 5'5". So he towered over people. Martha was very short. In her tippy toes, she was 5 foot tall. She was overweight and had been a bit heavy set all of her life. And the two of them next to each other, remember the old cartoons in the 30s, Mutt and Jeff? That's what they looked like.
Do you think that it was a passionate romance, or was it just kind of a tit-for-tat deal? You know, she needed what she thought would be a good stepfather for children, and he needed a rich widow.
Good question. In the beginning, that was the case. They didn't have an arranged marriage, and there were a lot of arranged marriages in colonial America. They didn't have that. It was a marriage of two people who were sort of friends. And then, interestingly enough, over a year, they fell in love with each other. And Washington, a year after his marriage, wrote a friend that he had found his partner for life, and was very much involved with Martha at that time. And Martha saw in George things she didn't expect. I mean, she saw in him, in the beginning, a rough, tough soldier type, and discovered, in fact, he was many times a very gentle guy. He was extremely well-read, knew a lot about politics, was a good administrator for her lands and everything. And in addition to that, and when I tell this to people, they're always astounded. George Washington had a feminine side. He loved fabric. He loved interior decorating. He loved gardening. He loved going shopping with Martha to buy clothes for her and for him. And like she never anticipated this. So there's a lot of things that she could like and admire in him that you didn't get with most guys in that era, or today, actually. So the relationship between the two, after about a year, they become quite involved with each other, and were so all their lives.
Hmm. And when they set up shop or housekeeping, they go to his mansion or his home. But she had all these other big homes, right? I mean, she didn't really want to do that, did she?
No, she did. She didn't, and it was the source of their first fight. And she had a good grounds to stand there. She said, I own 5 plantations. They're all here in the Fredericksburg, Virginia area. My house is here. All my friends are here, my relatives. Why should I move up to Mount Vernon on the Potomac? And his argument was, well, that's where I live. That's where I live, and I'm the husband, and you're the wife, and that's that. We're going to live at Mount Vernon. And he won the argument.
Let me ask you about her children and his role as a stepfather. And by the way, we're talking with Dr. Bruce Chadwick about George and Martha Washington. Two of her children had died, and the two who have survived needed a lot of care. The young woman had a serious illness, right?
She did. Patsy was an epileptic. And in that era, I mean, today, when you're diagnosed with epilepsy, there are drugs you can take, so you're okay. But back then, in the 1760s and 70s, there was no medical treatment for epileptics. And what George did, he had fashion designers make her dresses with thin pockets in the dresses where she should put sticks. And when she had a seizure, could just pull the stick out of her dress and shove it into her mouth so she could survive the seizure. He also bought her a ring with a big rubber bulb on it to do the same thing. She could just stick it into her mouth and bite down on the bulb when she had a seizure. He followed Patsy around the plantation, unseen, just about all day long, to keep an eye on her, as did Martha, in case she got sick. Whenever they met doctors anywhere in their travels, and they traveled a lot, they would always ask the doctors, do you know anything about epilepsy or any doctors that do? And if they did or know somebody who did, they said, well, come down to Mount Vernon. We'll pay all your expenses, pay all your fees. Our daughter needs help. So they do that a lot for her, and it wasn't enough because when she was, I guess she was about 13 or 14, she had a really bad seizure at Mount Vernon at dinner in front of everybody, and she fell to the floor with the seizure, and George Washington went down on the floor with her and hugged her and got the sticks and stuff into her mouth, and it didn't help. She died later that night. Mm. And then she was quiet, studious, very intellectual, well-read, poetry, loved going to school. Now, her brother, Jackie, he was just the opposite side of the rainbow from his sister. He was a hellion. He had no interest in education or school or reading, never behaved. He was such a problem. So they sent him off to a boarding school in Baltimore, like people do today. Kids trouble, you send them off to a boarding school, and hopefully they'll straighten them out. And the boarding school tells George Washington, well, I can straighten him out. This is a boarding school with rigid discipline. And my, what was his famous phrase? My slogan here is that no boy is helpless. So Washington goes back to Mount Vernon, and about a month, 6 weeks later, gets a letter from the schoolmaster. And he says, your son, he's helpless. Okay. So he had a lot of problems. At school, he really did. He had no interest in staying there. And my favorite story about Jackie at school was George had written him a letter. He would tell, just like teenagers today, right? He would tell his stepfather everything his stepfather wanted to hear to keep him off his back. And Washington and his wife are going to go and visit him at his boarding school. And he's really happy that they're going to come up. He said, I'm so happy. You know what we'll do to celebrate? We'll go to the track. So when Patsy dies, Martha says to George, I want Jackie taken out of college and bring her back home here. And George knows that that's not a good idea because college is going to make Jackie grow up. And he tells Martha, yeah, you're right. I'll go get him, and brings him back.
And he got married young, right, Jackie, or something like that?
Jackie died at 27. Enlisted in the army, his father had prevented him from enlisting till the very last battle of the war, Yorktown, because he feared for safety, like any father does. Mm-hmm. And Jackie went into the army. He was so proud. And he caught yellow fever. And he died of yellow fever at the end of the war. And the interesting thing to me, he was really sick with it. And he lasted far longer than doctors anticipated. And so we can't understand why you're surviving so long. And he said, I'm surviving so I can see the entire British Empire surrender to my father. Mm. And that he did. They surrendered to George. And then a couple of days later, his son died.
Yeah, and that's such a poignant moment. I mean, this is the biggest battle, the one that ultimately leads to the end of the war. And everybody's celebrating, but the Washingtons are in mourning.
Yeah, in mourning, too. And added to the fact that they had now lost... Martha had now lost all of her children, all of them. That was really a heartbreak for her.
Where am I off base here? Didn't Jackie, though, have some offspring?
They did. They did, and then his wife, he announced to his parents when he was, I guess he was 18, that he's going to get married. And George said, "You're what? You can't take care of yourself. You're going to take care of a wife and a family." He said, "Well, I'm going to get married." "Well, who are you going to marry?" "It's Nellie Calvert." And George says, "Nellie Calvert? She's 15. Now, in that era, and I got to remind my audiences of this, in that era, a girl who got married at 15 or 16, 17, was not that unusual. Guys, too. Wasn't odd. And everybody loved Nellie Calvert. She was the daughter of a really, really wealthy guy who owned most of Maryland. But George was dead set against it because of her age, and he just didn't want his son to get married that young. So Martha starts this campaign. She lobbies with everybody, and she tells everybody, "Well, if you see George in town, make sure you say to him, 'Oh, I heard that your son is interested in Nellie Calvert. What a wonderful girl. What a catch for him.'" Mm-hmm. Or if you write George a letter, add something in the letter that, "Oh, I heard about Nellie Calvert. This is wonderful news." Now, George figures this out in about, what, 5 minutes? And goes along with it, and then eventually writes everybody a letter, and he says, "Okay, I give up. They want to get married, it's fine by me." So they do. And this is really interesting to me. So Jackie is now 18 or 19. He's had all these problems with his father his entire life. He writes his father a letter. And in the letter, he says, "You are a great stepdad. I have given you so much trouble. And despite all the trouble and disagreements we had, you've been there. You know, you've been a rock. You've been a great husband to my mother. I really love you." And George Washington kept that letter with him on his person or in his desk all of his life.
We're talking with Dr. Bruce Chadwick about George and Martha Washington. He's published several books about George Washington, including one on George and Martha, right? You have a specific book written about that?
Right. The one on George and Martha is called The General and Mrs. Washington. The other two, one is George Washington's War, which is about his leadership in the Army. And the third one is called The First American Army, in which he's a minor figure. It's mostly about the type of guys that fought in the Revolutionary Army.
Bruce Chadwick joins us on the Historians Podcast. We'll be back with him in just a moment. Want to put in a word for the Historians Podcast GoFundMe campaign, which is underway for 2019. Welcome your contributions at GoFundMe.com, 2019 The Historians. They'll walk you through it online, and you can make a donation that way. Or you can send a donation by mail, make out the check to me, Bob Cudmore, and send to Bob Cudmore, 125 Horseman Drive, Scotia, New York, 12302. The General and Mrs. Washington, the title of the book about George and Martha, written by our guest, Professor Bruce Chadwick. We're rapidly whiling away the time here. I want to get in some other topics, you know, kind of topic areas. They never had children. What's up with that?
George was sterile. The father of our country was sterile. He probably got this when he was with his brother, Lawrence, in Barbados in the Caribbean. Doctors thought warm climate would dry Lawrence out and he'd kick his tuberculosis. That didn't happen. He died. And when George was there on Barbados, he got smallpox. And people theorized that the smallpox may have made him sterile. And they never had kids.
Now, did George Washington, through the years, have lovers?
No. No, he didn't. He had his relations with women before Martha were dreadful. You know this famous saying, guys, about getting the first pace with women? He couldn't get out of the dugout. He was just terrible. He had a relationship with his next-door neighbor, a woman named Sally Fairfax, who was, flat-out gorgeous. And there's no record of how far the relationship went between the two of them. But we do know that for a year or so, he was sweet on her. But as for after he got married to Martha, no, nothing.
Well, didn't you say that Martha kind of went to Sally and said, I don't know if she said to keep your hands off George or something like that?
Yeah, Martha. Well, people in that era, today, people gossip a lot. Back in the colonial era, people gossiped all day long. Everybody knew what was going on in the state of Virginia, and Martha, for sure, knew about George's fling, whatever it was, with Sally. Remember that book and movie, The Godfather? There's a great line in there. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. And then it was Martha's plan with Sally. She went over to Sally the first day she moved to Mount Vernon, hugged her, and said, Sally, you and I are going to be each other's best friends all of our lives. And they were. They became very, very close friends. And, there was nothing ever again between George and Sally. Absolutely nothing.
Now, you probably know this, and I apologize for being just sort of vague, but the day after your talk and that great conference up at the community college in Fulton, Montgomery, I always watch CBS Sunday Morning, and they did a piece with a woman whose name escapes me, who's an anchor in New York City, and she's written an historical novel or historical fiction about a woman who might have been a lover of George Washington. You ever hear about
her? Yeah,
she's the woman that she posits as the lover had a big house in North Manhattan. And what do you think? Had you ever heard of that before?
No. When I first read of George and Sally, I investigated that to try and find out if there were other women. And I never found any evidence of that. And I think the most interesting to defend that is that during all the winters of the war, Martha lived with George in his army camp.
I certainly wanted to bring that up with you. I wasn't aware of that until you were talking about it, but then I've heard it elsewhere. Yeah, she was at the Valley Forge, for example.
Yeah. She was in every army camp from about early November to the end of March. And, you know, she left her plantation mansion at Mount Vernon and lived in one room with her husband at these army camps. And the people of the country, everybody, really admired her for doing that because nobody else's wife did that. And she underwent a lot of hardships. And I got this intriguing letter I found from a soldier at Valley Forge. Valley Forge was horrendous with death and starvation. It's awful. And in the letter, this guy writes his wife back in Virginia or wherever, and he says that the word is that on Monday, Martha Washington is going to arrive for the winter. And when she gets here, we're all sure that things will be all right. She visited hospitals. She helped arrange lunches, breakfast, dinners, parties, receptions for the officers. She had a tremendous effect on the Army all those winters.
Did she want, after the war ended, did she want him to become president?
She did. Everybody did, except him. He quit the Army after the war and said, I'll never hold public office again. And the country, everybody in the country just begged him to be president. And he said, I won't do it. So finally, he sits down with his wife and says, what do you think? Everybody wants to be president, but I don't want to do it. She says, George, it's destiny. It's destiny that people called you to lead them in the war and they're calling you to lead them in peacetime. Now, she hated politics and she despised politicians. So she did not want a politician's life. And she didn't really want to be the first lady, but she knew her husband should do that. And so she went along with it.
And she also created the position of first lady, if you will. I mean, did they call her the first lady?
No, they called her Lady Washington. I'm not sure when the term first lady began, but it was later than that. And then the interesting thing to me, you know, our presidents, when they leave office, all of their lives, they're addressed as Mr. President. Washington didn't want that. He said, don't call me Mr. President when I leave office. Call me General Washington. And that's what people called him till he died. And I joke, I'm a teacher, and I joke with my students. I said, didn't you vote for, Mrs. So-and-so as first lady in the last election? And when you think about it, you know, we have whoever is married to the president becomes our first lady, and she has a lot of responsibility socially and culturally in things that she does, but nobody elected her to the job.
Now, who died first, Martha or George?
George, all the men in George's family, his father, grandfather, uncles, all died young. They all died in their 40s. Now, in that era, most people died in their 40s. It wasn't unusual. And he, I think, lived life as hard as he could, thinking he would die in his 40s. But he didn't. He lasted until 67, which at the time was quite old. And he would have lived longer, but he went horseback riding on his plantation in Virginia in a snowstorm, came in and had his dinner and talked to people for a while in his wet clothes, caught what was probably pneumonia, and died a few weeks later. Mm. And she lived 2 years later, and then she passed.
Mm. Now, they owned slaves, both of them. She owned more than he did. What happened? But and there's always the story that George Washington, in his will, freed his slaves?
He did. He did. He technically owned about 150, and on his death, they were all freed. Martha retained the ownership of the other 150, and on her death, most of them were freed, although some went, I think, to her children through her will. George wanted to free all of them, but legally he couldn't. And, you know, George Washington owned all these slaves, but was against slavery all of his life. And at one point, tried to get a bill through the state legislature of Virginia when he was younger to eliminate slavery, but it never got out of committee. And then as the president, he talked to the Marquis de Lafayette a long time about establishing a plantation, of freeing Washington's slaves and moving them to a separate plantation to work as paid laborers, but that never came to fruition.
Mm. And also, was it tobacco that they grew on at Mount Vernon? I mean, was that their main crop?
They did. They grew tobacco for a long time. And Washington, being a really good businessman, always kept an eye on markets for products. And when the market for tobacco declined in like the 1790s, he switched over to mostly producing corn and wheat. He also bought a ship and moved his products up and down the East Coast on the schooner that he bought, and also used the schooner for fishing, and then would sell fish up and down the East Coast. Later, after his presidency, he built a distillery on Mount Vernon and called it America's largest bar.
Well, Bruce Chadwick, it's been a pleasure talking with you on the Historian's Podcast. Bruce Chadwick, author of a number of books, and he's a professor at New Jersey City University and at Rutgers. His book about George and Martha, the General and Mrs. Washington. You've been listening to the Historian's Podcast, and I'm Bob Cudmore.